Blog Talk Radio.
What's the matter, Glenn? You smoke like your grandmother.
Two underneath your down, a desert wind in view. A shot of fireball, one reason turned it through. A 40 ounce of steel and silver and the ice will brew. I'm so bored of doing nothing, but I got nothing to do. So pour us up the Boilermakers, ask around if there any sisters. Pour us up the Boilermakers, time to knock the back.
Hello, Turnbuckle Turmoil fans. Welcome back to the show here on another Sunday. Mother's Day today. Happy Mother's Day to all the... Welcome, Turnbuckle Turmoil fans. Happy Mother's Day today to all that applies to. We hope you're having a great Mother's Day. QT and Sun Guy with you as usual. Our guest is going to be joining us in just a few moments. If you're looking for some wrestling today, Blue Collar Wrestling running as usual on a Sunday afternoon. You can also find Prime Time Wrestling in Georgetown, Kentucky. That show featuring Tough Guy Inc. returning to the area. So if you have wrestling near you, get out there, support. Take your mother by her ringside seat. QT, lots of wrestling in our neck of the woods over the last few days and continuing with Blue Collar Wrestling today.
Yes. Now, Sign Guy, did you ever hear about that Portland wrestler back in the 70s who made a brief appearance and he was called Mustang Mike? Actually, no, he was called Mustang Pete. Do you remember that?
Mustang Pete? I do not.
Oh, okay. Well, there was a wrestler who was briefly wrestling for Portland. I can't, for the life of me, I cannot find the whereabouts of his unknown. I mean, where he went and where he left. He was only seen like about three times at Portland Wrestling, and I remember one match distinctly. Where he went up against Rip Oliver and got pinned within about 5 minutes, Mustang Pete. And I ask you this question because you may have seen a movie last night that dealt with Mustangs.
I might have. And it looks
oh,
like
okay.
Our has joined us. So I want to bring him on right away. We are joined today by the Miracle, Mike James. Miracle, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking time out of your Mother's Day to join us.
Yeah. Hey, how's it going, man?
Doing very well today. Now, since it is your first time here on Turnbuckle Turmoil, we will start you out with the first-timer's question. What led to you getting into the business of professional wrestling?
I mean, have you ever watched professional wrestling? That shit's amazing. I don't know. I just I started watching it as a kid. It something I just stuck with, and the right opportunity came along. I happened to get really good training and sent me on my way. You know.
Now, when you started training, did you have a background as far as any type of previous athletics or any previous drama teachings or anything like that that prepared you, or was professional wrestling the start of this whole thing for you?
I mean, I played all like the traditional sports and stuff in school, baseball, football, track, blah, blah, blah. I used to get beat up a lot, which that actually prepared me for a future in professional wrestling, which sucked at the time, but ended up being pretty beneficial, you know?
For sure. Now, you wrestle there in the Arizona area. quite a bit there in the southwest part of the country, but you also have experience in Alaska, which is sort of an isolated area as far as wrestling goes. There's a good scene up there, but it's kind of away from where a lot of the traditional supply of wrestlers would be. When you have wrestled in Alaska, what have been your impressions of their wrestling scene?
It's really, really small. Biggest state in the country, smallest wrestling scene in the country, it has to be. There's, from what I know, there's like three promotions up there. Was that 49th State Wrestling, NSA Wrestling, and Power Plant Promotions. They use about the same 10 to 12 guys. There's places to wrestle and there's opportunities to wrestle, but I mean, it's literally all the same people. They fly in a few people up in the Northwest. Like, I just so happen to be up there because I have family up there. So it kind of got me some opportunities, but you know, it's very small.
Now, as far as what you've seen as far as the talent and the promoters and how things are ran, do you think things are done similarly to the promotions that are in the lower 48 in Canada, or do you think that they run things differently being so isolated and away from your more traditional hotbeds of wrestling?
I mean, it's basically the same stuff, but on a lot smaller level. Matthew Plant with Power Plant Promotions, he mixes in MMA and boxing with his shows. And the last one I worked for them, they did really well. I want to say like 600-700 people. But that's the big one up there. And they're the company that just worked with WrestlePro when they went up and worked with Sullivan Arena. So, I mean,
absolutely. That was
like
a huge show
right
for Alaska.
Yeah, that's quite the big deal. But yeah, I mean, outside of that, I mean, it's a lot of the same stuff you'd see down here, honestly. I'm not, you know, it's not too far off.
Being in the Southwest as your base, I'm sure you've seen a lot of Lucha Libre wrestling and have come across quite a few of the luchadors that come up from Mexico, a lot of the people that are trained in that style in a traditional area for Lucha Libre. Lucha wrestling is something that has gained quite a bit of popularity in the United States over the last 10 years or so. We see a lot of lucha-only promotions popping up all over the United States now. What do you think of the lucha style and its rise in popularity?
Oh, goddamn, pal. Man, Lucha Libre is either really, really good or it's really, really bad. I mean, yeah, I don't see a lot of in between. Like, you'll see a lot. I mean, the fans are fucking passionate. Like, holy Jesus. I mean, they come out in full force. Like, they bring all their friends, all their family. They got these weird wooden spinning noisemakers, these fucking air horns. They almost got stabbed at a lucha show. I mean, yeah, man. It's something else.
Now, obviously, having almost been stabbed, that is a very bad day at the office. But in professional wrestling, not as much in recent times, but when territorial wrestling and the kayfabe was in its strongest days, there were a lot of scary moments as far as what the fans could and would do to the wrestlers they didn't like. It still happens sometimes today. What would you say is the scariest incident that you've witnessed from a fan at a show?
From a fan? Oh, damn. You know, I think I was just talking about this the other day. Shit, we did a – this was a Lucha Libre show, and they were doing – dude, they were doing shows with like crowds of like 900 to 1,000 people every week, and they were pretty loud and rowdy. And there was one fan that had to have been drunk off his ass. I mean, he really wasn't in his right mind. But he started getting handsy with one of my buddy's cousins who came out to the ring with him. Fucking damn near started a riot. They pushing each other back and forth. My buddy's cousin punched him in the face, fucking busted him open, busted his own hand open. Then you got, like, all these people around trying to get involved. I mean, it's, that was a pretty hairy incident. That was a lot of fun, actually.
Now, another part of wrestling that is really picking up is Japanese-style wrestling. New Japan is launching a United States tour in a few weeks. They're having standalone shows in major American markets. They have the television presence on Access TV. New Japan seems to be possibly the hottest company in the world right now, despite the fact that they're one of the oldest companies in the world right now, over 40 years in business. What do you think of the rise of New Japan in the American marketplace?
Oh, man, it's a long time coming, honestly. I mean, when you think of how much of American wrestling has been influenced, you know, by the Japanese style, at least since, you know, the early 90s on, you know, I'm surprised it hasn't had more of a television presence over here, honestly. You know, it's a great style. I mean, I love watching it myself. That's probably my preferable if I watch anything.
A lot of independent wrestlers in the last 5 years or so have been making Japanese tours. We see a lot more instances of that now than we ever did before. Usually it was only some of the very top guys that had a national presence that went to Japan. Now we see independent guys that don't really have the national television behind them going to Japan to wrestle. Is making it to Japan something that is a personal goal of yours as far as your career, or is that something that's not really a consideration for you?
I actually wrestled in Japan back in 2009.
Oh, there we go.
I mean, but I'd love to go back, honestly. I mean, that was it wasn't the full Japanese experience. It was, what's the name of this company? International Championship Wrestling. We went around and did tours, like a tour of the military bases. So we performed in front of the Air Force and the Marines and the Navy, Army, stuff like that. So, I mean, it was, it's definitely been a goal of mine, like, forever. I mean, I used to catch the tapes with RVD and Sabu over in Japan, the FMW stuff. Yeah, definitely love to go back.
Now, obviously, Japan's a very, very long ways. It's a far trip. Alaska, also a pretty substantial trip. On the landscape of things, what would you say might be the most farthest away from you spot that you would want to go to wrestle where you haven't before?
Oh, where I haven't before. Oh, damn, that's a good question. Yeah, Australia, probably. Like, I'd really like to get down to Australia. Maybe, I hear they do some pretty crazy shit down in South Africa. Like, I might, I want to check that out. I mean, honestly, there's no place too far. You know, as long as it's not too cold. Like, holy God, man, I had enough of that in Alaska. But, yeah.
Now, there's also a lot of wrestling in Canada, and some of those tours can be in some definitely cold climates. There's the famous stories of the shows where the ring truck would drive across lakes because they were frozen solid, and it was easier to drive across those than the roads if it was a heavy vehicle. Have you experienced any of these Canadian trips at all before?
Oh, God, no, and I hope I don't ever. That doesn't sound like fun at all. That sounds like a fucking horror. I don't really like the cold, man. Like, the whole Alaska thing was definitely, that was a different experience. We did, a Kenai run. It was out on the peninsula. We did that in some pretty nasty weather. So, I mean, that's probably, like, as close as I'll get to any of those Frozen Canada tours. It's just, yeah, man, you spend 2 decades out in the desert, man. Anything below 60 is just, like, icicles.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and I know QT has questions as well, so I'm going to pass things over to him.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, thank you, Sanjay. Hey, Mr. Miracle.
How's it going, man?
Not too bad. Pretty good. Mr. Miracle, I saw your YouTube video entitled Miracle Mike James versus EJ Sparks Cactus League Wrestling, March 15th, 2019. My first question is, due to video analysis, which I am somewhat an expert at, I believe EJ Sparks is about 6'1", 195 pounds, while you are 5'11", 172 pounds. Am I close?
That is not even, no. Neither one of us are that tall, and I weigh a little bit more than that.
Oh, well, my second choice was a trim 190 pounds.
That's a little much, but, you know, let's say that's it. And now I'm only 180 right now.
Wow. All right. Okay. Now, this was for Cactus League Wrestling. Can you tell us a little bit about your matches in Juggalo Championship Wrestling? Is that also in the Arizona area? Juggalo.
Oh, yeah. JCW of the Insane Clown Posse, those were fucking incredible. We did the TV tapings for them. It was at 2007. They came out. That's why I got to work with Osawa, Corporal Robinson, and Too Tough Tony. I actually got hit in the face with the flaming fist on that one. That was pretty fucking horrible, to tell you the truth. But, you know, some of the other shows, I mean, those places were wild. We get hooked up with, like, concert tickets and such because they do the concerts along with the shows, right? So you'd have these crazy assholes out in the crowd throwing trash cans and wrenches and spitting at you. Now, I got smacked in the back of the head by a goddamn boot one time, and I turn around. This is a 13-year-old girl. She is calling me some of the absolute worst, you know, filthiest names you could possibly think of. And here I am with my fist clenched thinking, I'm going to clock this little girl. And I look behind her, and there's like 100 angry, painted faces behind her. I'm like, you know what? I don't need this shit. And yeah, you got back in the ring. They're, you know, throwing stuff the whole time. They're wild.
Well, for our fans that aren't familiar with the flaming fist, can you tell us what the flaming fist is?
Yeah, this motherfucker poured alcohol on his fist, lit it on fire, then punched me right square in the face.
Wow.
The good news, I think I'm going to steal it. Yeah, wow is goddamn right, man.
Is this anything like the Flaming Moe, the drink that Homer Simpson made up at Moe's Tavern, and it had flaming cough syrup, and was it anything like the Flaming Moe? And Aerosmith was on that episode also. Was it like the Flaming Moe?
Nah, man, it was exactly like getting punched in the mouth with a hand that was on fire.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't flaming.
No, man, not on the flaming though.
Okay, it wasn't flaming cough syrup. Okay. All right. Now, who is this Corporal Robinson that you speak of? Corporal Robinson.
He's a deathmatch guy. I think he did some stuff out in Japan. We're with IWA Mid-South. Worked with JCW a lot throughout the years. Pretty common deathmatch name.
Now you say he's Corporal Robinson. Did he have a small cameo appearance on Hogan's Heroes with Colonel Klink, Corporal Robinson and Colonel Klink?
Wow. You're really digging deep in the archives on that joke, huh?
Yes, very deep, yes.
I cannot. I can neither confirm it nor deny the participation of Corporal Robinson in that particular event. Top secret stuff, you know.
Put it this way, in a more existential way, could Corporal Robinson beat Colonel Klink in a 2 out of 3 falls steel cage match? Do you think he would have had that
capability? Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, okay. It'd be a bloodbath. Everyone would be bloody, from people in the ring all the way out to the 3rd, 4th, 5th, 18th row. Oh, yeah, dude.
Wow. So you believe that Corporal Robinson would totally emasculate Colonel Klink, take his eye monocle, and ground it beneath the Iron Buddha discipline?
Oh, yeah. That is exactly what I said. That is like 100% word for word the stuff right there.
Wow. Corporal Robinson and the Iron Buddha discipline. Okay, very good. Well, now, Miracle Mike, speaking about iron boots of discipline, I was pretty amazed at your footwear that you were wearing against your match with EJ Sparks. Where do you get your footwear and your tights?
I got my tights at a place in Mexico and stole the boots off a dead guy.
Oh, stole the boots off a dead guy. Wow.
Yeah, notorious grave robber. Notorious.
Wow.
Don't tell anybody that, though.
I think Gene Hackman was in a movie that was made in New Mexico or Arizona where he was in a quick draw contest and someone stole the boots off one of the guys he shot and he was called Ace. They pulled the boots off of him. Yes.
They called him AIDS?
Ace. Yes, I can't remember the movie. It had a girl in it that won the quick draw competition in the end by shooting Gene Hackman. Yes.
Tell me this. Who would win in a gunfight shootout? Gene Hackman? Gene Wilder?
Oh, Gene Wilder.
Fucking right.
Yes.
This guy.
And I said that without the slightest hesitation.
Oh, well, you should. Gene Wilder's the man.
Wow. Okay. Gene Wilder, yes. All right. Well, now, in your match with EJ Sparks, this match took place in Tucson, Arizona, but it was in an indoor venue. Do you believe the indoor venue had a temperature of 72 degrees?
I think it was more about
74.8. 74.8. Oh.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
I do everything I can to keep that regulated, keep everybody up to date. They call me meteorologist Mike James. Nobody's ever once called me that, for the record. Not once. And I hope they don't ever.
Are you a Weather Channel groupie?
Oh, fuck no. I live in Arizona. Whoa. We got two weathers here, man. We got hot and we got less hot. I don't really need a whole channel for that. Occasionally the wind blows.
Well, you've got Flagstaff that's up near 7,000 feet and has snow sometimes.
Nah, fuck that place.
Oh, wow, okay. Why, okay. Well, now, in your match with EJ Sparks, it looked like the match took place at an indoor soccer field, perhaps for kids. Am I right?
That's absolutely right.
Oh, okay, indoor
Mexico,
soccer.
Mexico, man. We're close to the border down here, man. Popular sport.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you're right. That would be pretty popular. Football, yes. Okay.
Football, yeah.
Well, Miracle
Absolutely,
Mike, can
man.
You tell about some of your wrestling events for Rockstar Wrestling Alliance, kind of an unusual name. Rockstar.
Yeah, Rockstar. It's a nice mix of rock and roll music and professional wrestling. And kind of like the other guy touched on a little bit before with, you know, the popularity of Lucha Libre, especially down here in a very, very Hispanic city. We got a lot of Lucha Libre fans. So they do a really good job of mixing the two. I just worked their last event, Lord Draco, dude's like 6'3", 6'4", big 280. He's been their Lucha Libre champion for a while now. Kicked the shit out of me. That is, you know, whatever. It's fun. We had the double ring going. You know, have you ever seen the Mexican style where they have like two rings next to each other, but the one you know, next to it is like, you know, 10 feet up in the air?
Well, I have been to wrestling matches where the ring was elevated on stilts, yes.
Well, there's like two rings, and like one was up on the stage and one was down on the floor, so it was like a really cool visual, you know. But that was an excellent show, and those always draw well, too. Like, go out to the Rialto Theater, we usually fill that place up. It was like a good 700-800 people down on the floor.
Wow, very nice. Holy smokes. All right. Well, now, Miracle Mike, when you wrestled in Okinawa, Japan, could you feel the spirits or the ghost of World War II soldiers and sailors?
Oh, shit. You want to hear a ghost story? I got to go.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, we can give you a ghost story. Hell, yeah.
Well,
I had some downtime. Like, we had a little bit of downtime in between the shows. And they were carting us around. I mean, fortunately, like, everything was taken care of, our rides, our food, hotels, you know, yada, yada, yada. So they gave us some vouchers, whatever, we get on the free van. You know, we talked to the guy in the van, and we're like, hey, you know, we're obviously in town doing our thing. We're not from here. What do we do? He's like, well, hey, man, you want to see a place that's older than Jesus? I'm like, hell yeah, we want to see a place that's older than Jesus. So he takes us out to these castle ruins, right? And so it's like, just basically like the bricks and the foundation, like none of the buildings and stuff are up, but you know, it's old, it's like 5,000 years old. It's like cool as hell, right? Dude just drops us off, so we're, you know, left to our own devices. We pay the, you know, the 500 yen or whatever it was to get in. We, you know, roll through, take the pictures. You know, we look off in the distance and there's this like half built, half, you know, broke down hotel in the back. We're like, oh, we gotta go check this out. So, you know, we go to the back. There's all sorts of graffiti on the wall, like the windows are busted out. You know, there's like this door's ripped off the thing, places where you can tell it's just, you know, been set on fire. You know, we're walking through, we have to like climb outside of ledges to go through windows to get around other parts because there's either debris in the way or it's just like the way it was built. You know, there's like literally stairs to nowhere. You know, we get down to this big like open area, right? It's got this big wall and there's all these windows on it. And but they're not just traditional windows. They have bars on them. They look like prison windows. You know, we're taking our flashlights, we're shining them in the wind, in the door, in the window, trying to, it's so dark, you can't see anything, right? It's just like, damn, and it's starting to get dark, and it's fucking, you know, getting real creepy, right? Like, no joke. So I'm looking at this big wall, and it's like, you know, big 12, 15-foot wall, and it says, don't look behind you, the walls have eyes. You know, I look up, and there's like some shrubbery and some plants and shit, and I shit you not, there's this little gray dude with black, deep black eyes and black hair staring at me through the fucking plant. My body froze. Like, there was no moving. Like, I was, like, stuck. And my buddy was behind me, and he saw it, too, and he had to, like, push me from behind. The conscious decision where I go, don't touch shit. We're getting the fuck out of here. So we hustle down, and we're stumbling through windows, over, going over more debris. You know, we find a – we're at the top of a mountain inside these tiny rooms, and there's, like, a burnt-out, completely constructed car in one of them. It's the whole, you know, fucked up, right? So we get out of there. We go back to the hotel, and you know, we're talking to the girl who's been our basically our host for the week. And we're like, man, yeah, we just came out of this place. We saw this ghost. She's like, oh yeah, let me tell you about that place. We're like, what? So it turns out that this dude had all this money, and he wanted to build a hotel on these ruins. And there was a monk that lived back there, and it's like, hey, buddy, this is sacred ground. It's a burial ground. You can't build out here. It's going to disturb the spirits. He's like, hey, guess what? I got money. Fuck you, pal. So dude starts up his fucking hotel, and he's, you know, building it all over the place. It's a big project. But then, like, while the project's going on, machines are breaking down. The fire's breaking out. Guys are dying on the job. And he legit runs out of money and runs out of people willing to go up there and work. So it just sat up there, you know, vacant for the longest time. You know, while it was sitting vacant, it got used as a whorehouse. And the fucking Yakuza was going up there doing business. And you know, all sorts of other illegal activity was going on. Well, while all this was going down, the place burnt down again. And it killed a bunch of the hookers, killed a bunch of the johns. Like, it was just this big fucking mess, right? So, wouldn't you know, this dude gets more money. And he goes back to build it again. But this is when the construction starts getting all weird. You know, he's building stairways up to the ceiling, ledges that go nowhere, you know, whatever. And then, you know, just to get to the end of the story, the dude went crazy. And the guy is still, he's still in an insane asylum in Okinawa today.
Wow. Holy smokes. That is a good yarn. Wow. Well, do you ever hope that someday you will be a part of a wrestling event where the wrestling ring is set up outside, but maybe within a seeing distance of the prison camps Auschwitz and Bergen-Belsen in Germany?
That seems kind of offensive. I mean, you know, sick house, whatever, but I mean, whatever. I'll wrestle wherever they pay me. I'll wrestle outside the gates of hell. I don't give a shit.
Well, I've seen YouTube videos where people take a tour of Auschwitz or Bergen-Belsen, and they're taking selfies of themselves. Pretty inappropriate. Yes.
Yeah, this is kind of a dick move, man.
Yes.
I wonder if any, like, bad spirits and shit just follow them out of there, and then they, like, lead horrible lives for, like, the next 7 years or whatever after they do dumb shit like that.
Well, I think several people that have taken selfies of themselves have seen a ghostly figure when the pictures come out. It's true. Ghostly apparitions in the selfies.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Yes. And speaking of haunted places, do you think you'll ever get to wrestle on the island of Alcatraz?
I'm pretty sure I won't. I mean, again, I mean, if it was possible, I'd do it, but I don't really think that's going to be made possible.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Miracle, can you tell us, now these two are a legend in the wrestling business. Were you in the ring at the same time with Madman Pondo and the Honky Tonk Man?
Absolutely. That was that was another Juggalo Championship Wrestling show. I got money stapled to my face, and I got a center block broken over my dick with a sledgehammer. Great times.
Two extreme, ends of the spectrum there. Who stapled the money to your face, Madman Pondo?
Yeah, that was Madman Pondo.
Ooh, okay.
Well, Hulk stayed pretty uninvolved. I mean, that's actually kind of an interesting story too. Because we show up to the venue, you know, we have the matches set up, and we're, you know, talking to the promoter and shit. And then here comes through the parking lot, his hair down, fucking waving in the breeze. You know, who you fucking know, Honky Tonk Man, right? You know, he comes in, and I think actually Corporal Robinson was booking at the time. And he comes in, he's like, "Hey, I want to be part of the show." And he's like, "Man, we got no money for you, Hulk." He's like, "Man, I ain't here for money, man. I'm just here to be part of the show. Hell, I'm here as a title fan. Put me in a Pondo. I'm a Pondo fan." And they're like, "All right, shit, you can manage Pondo." So here I am in this fucking spot where I'm supposed to be the good guy, and, you know, Pondo's supposed to be the dick. And then fucking Honky Tonk Man comes out. He gets all these Juggalos riled up, and they start throwing shit at me. And fucking, yeah, then we have the match, you know, which is cool. I stapled a bunch of money to his face, too, which is pretty dope. You know, I get to say it. You know, I had that experience in my life. So it wasn't one-sided, you know.
Ooh, well, that's always a plus. Wow, that's amazing. Okay, how would you compare the Honky Tonk Man to Frankie Kazarian? You also wrestled Frankie Kazarian. Can you tell us about how he compares with the Honky Tonk Man and how you did against Frankie Kazarian?
Well, considering I didn't really wrestle Honk, I mean, he stood on the outside yelling at me. Kazarian, I was super young. I was maybe a year and a half in the business, and I think he had just started working with TNA. Like, it's about that era. So, I mean, it ended up being a tournament, like a second-round match. I learned a lot. I mean, dude slapped me around quite a bit. I mean, I got the green boy spot for sure. But, I mean, that happened, like, so early on. I've always kind of used that as – I've never got the return match, but I've always kind of wanted the return match to kind of gauge myself and see, you know. I feel like I could – hang with Frankie Kazarian today a lot better than I could way back when. And I think I did a pretty good job back then. So
you believe that the training that you underwent under the Navajo Warrior prepared you pretty well for the match in your young career, the Navajo Warrior?
Oh, absolutely.
Did he make you run a lot of ring ropes when you were first starting out?
It was ring ropes and squats, a lot of crisscross drills, the five and fives, where you got to hit the ropes five times, then bump and get up and run. And do it five more times and bump and run. We got the 3 minute. Yeah, I mean, they whooped the shit out of us. Plus, it was training in the summertime in Arizona. We didn't have any air conditioning. It was hot. It was torturous, but well worth it.
Ooh, did you come close to getting heat stroke or throwing up?
You know, I've only ever thrown up one time after running. Like, I've always been athletic and kind of in shape. Like, even when I'm out of shape, I'm really not that far out of shape. The only time I ever threw up, I'm going to be really honest with you, I forgot what day it was. I forgot that we were training, and I made the mistake of eating some fucking Taco Bell after class. And had to do the 3 minute run and fucking puke those chalupas right the fuck up.
Taco Bell, boy, you couldn't get much worse than that. Okay.
Ooh. Yeah. Well, I was 22. My eating habits were a lot less clean than they are now.
Oh, okay. Wow. All right. Okay. Well, Mr. Miracle, in that match with EJ Sparks, at the 3 minute and 45 second mark, you took off from the second turnbuckle and landed a double axe handle to EJ. My question is, what percentage would you say you used the second turnbuckle for flight as opposed to the top turnbuckle? What percentage?
Oh, shit, man. I didn't really think too much about that. Shit, maybe 40%? Let's go with that. Let's just call it 40. Why not?
40%. Okay. Well, now that was quite the distance horizontally that you jumped. Did you go out for the long jump for your track team in high school, the long jump?
No, man. I was a sprinter.
Oh, a sprinter. Wow, okay. I'm going to guess that your 100-meter time was, I'm going to say, 11.1.
On my what? On my 100? I'm not that fast. God damn. God damn, pal, that's fast.
Well, there's a kid in Texas that just ran the fastest 100-meter time in the history of high school, and he ran a 10.12. So I was basing it a second later, 11.1.
Jesus, no, man, I was never that fast. That's wheels, man.
Okay, I'm going to bump it down to a 12.3.
All right, let's go with that. That doesn't sound too bad.
Oh, okay. And I'm going to say your 200-meter time was, I'm going to say, 23.6. 23.6, which is still pretty close.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. Let's go with that. I like that.
Oh, okay. All right.
I mean, you can't seriously think that I would, like, be keeping track of, like, high school records. I didn't say I was, like, good at these sports, for the record. But yeah, whatever the fastest believable time is, let's go with that.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, just for the record, this kid that just ran a 10.13 in high school, he had a wind aided. The wind was at his back, and he ran a 9.98. Ooh, boy.
Did he have a sail?
Close. Pretty close.
He should put the sail in front of him instead of having that parachute behind him, slowing him down. Put that thing in front of him, give him a couple extra seconds.
Parasailing, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Miracle, at the 7 minute and 30 second mark of this video, the commentator for the match said that EJ Sparks was attacking your sides and hitting your kidneys. He then said, and I quote, "I don't know if you have seen his YouTube channel, but he does a lot of drinking, and that's not going to help him at all." My question is it true that you do a lot of drinking? And if not, are you going to sue this announcer for defamation of character?
That's the thing. Like, as it turns out, I'm actually a world-class drinker. I can't even be mad at him about that. I mean, the drinking helps getting punched in the kidneys. He was right. That didn't help at all, to be fair.
Oh, you're a world-class drinker. Okay. Well,
world-class.
Well, when you do drink, do you mix cream, cream and rip a wine and call the drink Cripple, like Fred Sanford used to do.
No, I don't do any dumb shit like that. I usually just drink Jack Daniels and then follow it up with a little bit more Jack Daniels.
Whoa,
that's PBR.
Jack Daniels. That sounds like Nikki Sixx of the Motley Crue. Nikki Sixx.
You know, I like that guy's style. That guy just really didn't hold back.
Well,
to death.
That's true. He sometimes rock stars tend to inflate their ego and their partying and all that. Like Ozzy Osbourne. Yes. Who could have been also a good wrestler. Osbourne. Okay. Well,
absolutely.
Of being punched in the kidneys and drinking, have you seen the movie Three Amigos?
So I got Steve Martin in it?
Steve Martin and Martin Short and Chevy Chase as the Three Amigos.
I've heard of it. I've never actually seen it.
Oh, okay. Well, they go up against a Mexican bandito called El Guapo, and there's a famous scene in a bar where the Three Amigos walk in and walk up to the bar, and they order light beer. And this is in a rough Mexican cantina with many outlaws and banditos. And the bartender says, "We don't have light beer. All we have is tequila." And Martin Short said, "What's tequila?" And then Chevy Chase goes, "I think is it like a light beer? Oh, whatever. We'll have three shots of tequila." And they drink it down, and the reaction was pretty, well, it was the first time they had tequila, and that's your homework assignment, to look up the Three Amigos drink tequila. That's your homework assignment.
Yeah, I can handle that. I can do that.
Oh, okay. Well, now which
that sounds like a YouTube video, actually.
It is a YouTube video, yes. It's highly recommended.
I'm getting drunk, watch Three Amigos.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
It's highly recommended by Sign Guy. He recommends this, Three Amigos. Yes.
Fuck yeah.
Okay. Wow, all right. Okay. Well, now can you tell us about your 2005 IZW Rookie of the Year Award? That's pretty prestigious, 2005.
Hell yeah. That was a good year. I think I peaked too early. No, I'm just kidding. That was that was actually a pretty decent class. Like we had, let's say 6-7 guys out of that class that all stuck around. You know, like I mean, you'll see a lot of guys that they'll come train for a couple months and take off because you know getting beat up, bang for everybody. But to be named the Rookie of the Year out of that class, and that was all like fan voted stuff too. So I mean, that felt like that really meant a lot to me actually.
Did you get a plaque for this? A plaque?
No, I got it was a small trophy, but it's a trophy nonetheless.
Wow! All right. Now, does the IZW does that have a Hall of Fame?
It doesn't have a Hall of Fame, but as a matter of fact, we are having a we're having a reunion show this Saturday on the 18th in Tempe. IZW actually shut down in 2009, like September, October, I want to say. So, kind of getting the gang back together, we're going to reignite some classic rivalries and make a night out of it.
Oh, very nice. Are you yourself supposed to bring a dessert dish? You yourself?
Oh, shit, I ain't bringing any dessert. I'll be bringing a whole lot of punch.
Wow, punch, okay. All right, very good. All right. Well, Miracle Mike, your victory against EJ Sparks in that match came at the 10-minute and 45-second mark after it seemed the referee had a temporary eye incident and he couldn't see for about a split second before he counted the three fall. Can you remember this and what made the referee blink in astonishment and blindness?
Oh, it was really dusty in that building, man. I mean, we were on the soccer field right there. So a little bit of, the grass probably came up, probably just got a little wind, a little grass probably just came up. Just a little bit, you know what it takes, man. It's just that little grain of whatever getting in your eye feels like a rock. You know, poor guy, man. Like he is a trooper, honestly, for just really soldiering that one out and doing what he had to do to make sure that that victory was called right down the middle.
Wow. All right. Okay. Very good. And I also saw a YouTube video of yours called Johnny Suave versus Miracle Mike James, RWA. And this was at an outdoor ring, the Cerveza parking lot. And I believe it was on Cinco de Mayo. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, well, Cinco de Mayo was outside. I mean, you hit all the basics right there. Johnny Suave, a very very underrated guy in Arizona. He just went back out to California, though. I really enjoyed working with him. I felt like my matches were always fairly fast-paced, fairly intricate. It was always fun slapping around somebody that dabs, you know, so a lot of wins on that one.
Well, the referee for this match with Johnny Suave looked like he was 18 years old and he had no beard. And the referee in the indoor match looked like to be 40 to 45 years old with a thick, luxurious black beard. In your opinion, which referee was better? The one that got a grain of sand in his eye?
Well, the one that didn't have a beard, I'm pretty sure was being held hostage. I'm pretty sure it was only like 16, to be fair. Couldn't have really known what he was doing. Probably like trying to work his way out of captivity. But old referee Sean there, I mean, like I said, he really came through. Really came through for the old team on that one. Yeah, so I'm gonna give the nod to referee Sean.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, at the 12-minute and 9-second mark of this match, you tried a 619 against Johnny Suave. Were you a big fan of Rey Mysterio?
Absolutely. Still am.
Oh, good. Wow, very nice. Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Miracle, you said you were beat up quite a bit in high school. Were you a goth kid in a long black trench coat drinking coffee at Denny's and listening to bands such as The Cure and Effervescence?
Like, half of that is true. Like, half.
What?
The Cure part's true. The goth part's kind of true. I didn't have a trench coat, man. No trench coat. I was more of like a redneck punk rock kid, honestly.
Oh, I haven't heard of really any redneck punk very much. I'm pretty much going off the goth kids in South Park. Yes.
yeah. Nah, man. Well, yeah, no. I was kind of goth kid. I was just an angry young Midwest youth.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess you could call Arizona Midwest, I guess.
I was born in Kansas.
Okay. Have you ever wrestled in Oklahoma?
Sadly, no. I've never wrestled east or north of Texas, like as far out as I've gone in the U.S.,
Whoa, all right. How about New Mexico?
Yeah, I worked in New Mexico a couple times.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, Sign Guy earlier touched on the subject of Alaskan wrestling. Have you come across a manager, Y.T. Jones, up in Alaska?
Sprinkle, sprinkle, baby. Yeah. Fuck yeah, I know Y.T.
Yes. Now, I 99.9% of the time, I get along with Y.T. Jones, but recently, he said I gave him a stale fruit pie.
Oh, that's some bullshit. How are you going to play Y.T. like that?
Well, everyone knows.
You're not going to give me a stale fruit pie, are you? I ain't playing a stale fruit pie game, man.
I'll make you up a fresh beef pot pie, a fresh from scratch beef pot pie.
That sounds highly inappropriate. Can I just get like a package, like maybe a cherry fucking pie? Well, you know what I'm talking about, the Hostess ones.
Well, you see, the thing is, Miracle Mike, you have to be ranked number one in our Northwest Turnbuckle Turmoils top 9 7/8 wrestler rankings. So you'd have to come up here to the Northwest and say wrestle Pa Moonshine and roll them up 1, 2, 3 to get the number one ranking, and then I'd give you a fruit pie for being ranked number one.
Then I get the fruit pie. All I got to do is beat up Moonshine and get a fruit pie. Wow, that sounds like a win-win for me, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, YT Jones was ranked number one, and he claims I gave him a stale fruit pie, which might be true.
Wow. That's bold.
Well,
I mean, I can't approve that you're giving YT the stale fruit pie, but I can definitely approve of the method of giving out stale fruit pies. Like, that's good heat.
Oh, okay. It is good heat, yes. Yes. All right, well, I will now turn it back over to Sign Guy, and I'll be watching you closely and maybe ranking you in our Turnbuckle Turmoil weekly rankings, and I'll say hello to YT, Y-T Jones for you.
Yes. Sounds good, man.
Okay, back to you, Sign Guy.
Hey, man.
Well, Miracle, one of the things that a lot of wrestlers have on their personal goal list is the inclusion in the Pro Wrestling Illustrated Top 500. Independent wrestlers from all over the world send in their application to get considered for this every year. Obviously, there's only the 500 spots, and a lot of those go to the people on national television. Is PWI 500 something that is on your radar at all, or is that something that doesn't pop into your mind?
It's one of those things that I don't need, that I would take, I guess, you know what I mean? Like, that's not something I would actively pursue. As from what I understand, you kind of got to be in with some people and talk to some folks up there and kind of be a little bit more involved with whatever, as vague as that sounds. But if I so happen to end up on that list, I would take it as a very big compliment, you know?
Another thing that is, like, always controversial in the world of wrestling, it's happened since the birth of pro wrestling, it will happen until there is no more pro wrestling, and that is people dating within the business and relationships starting and ending, affecting promotions and the people in the promotions and so forth and so on. What is your personal stance on dating within the professional wrestling business?
Dan, what have you heard?
Nothing.
It's probably like any other job, honestly. Like, I mean, as long as you can keep things professional, like keep it away from the arena, like, you know, whatever. You know, but I feel like I've seen a lot more examples of that going wrong. You know, but I don't think that's exclusive to wrestling. I think they'd be like that with any job.
Fair enough. Well, we're down to the last few minutes of the show, and I want to give you ample time today. If there's anything you would like to say to the listeners, plug and promote anything and everything you have, upcoming appearances, merchandise, social medias, your favorite barbecue joint, anything in the world, floor is all yours.
Oh, hell yeah. First off, thank you guys for giving me an hour to run my mouth. This has been a lot of fun. If you are in Tucson, if you're in Tempe, especially the Impact Zone Wrestling Reunion Show, that's on the 18th, Sun Valley, Sun Studios, something like that. You get on my Facebook page. Just look at Miracle Mike James on Facebook or Sick House on Facebook. If you want to see more of these awesome videos that dude is talking about, just look up Planet Sick House. That's a little thing I got going on. Let's see. Sunday I'll be here in Tucson at the VFW wrestling for High Impact Wrestling. Sick House should be making an appearance in a 6-man tag match. Let's see what else I got. Plug the social media, did the YouTube, did the shows. Crimson Crown Wrestling. Yeah, if you're gonna be in California, that's another one. I'll be making my debut out there on June 1st. Really fucking excited to go out there. Shit, man, that's all I got.
Well, Miracle Mike James, it was a pleasure having you on Turnbuckle Turmoil today. We appreciate it greatly. I want to wish you continued success in your career. Fans, if you get the chance, go buy a ticket, watch him perform. I think you will be impressed with Miracle Mike and his abilities. Wherever there's wrestling, get out there, support it. Happy Mother's Day once again to all the mothers out there. And if you're in the Idaho area, you have Wrestle Club just about to start. You also have Blue Collar Wrestling today. So find yourself a show, take mom, buy her a ringside seat, and we will talk to you next week, next Friday afternoon. We have Alabama on the show. Should be a great time. We'll talk to you soon.